Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
This weekend, I'll be at Taco Bell Arena calling Boise State men's basketball against UNLV. That means I'm in town for the weekend. Chris, on the other hand, gets the assignment of calling the women's game in Las Vegas. What do they like to do in Las Vegas on Super Bowl weekend?
They like to throw a little money around every now and then, don't they?
They do. And on today's show, our goal is to make Chris, and you the listener as well, more intelligent and more ready to make the right plays this weekend.
Okay, because I'm not somebody who is like well-versed in sports gambling. I'm not somebody who knows all the parlays and the teases and all that mess. Nah, I'm not. That's not my background. I watch the sport for the sport. I don't really know I ever really placed a bet on a game. So I feel this is an opportunity. Like, I feel like the stars are aligning. How many times does somebody pay you to go to Las Vegas a couple of days before the Super Bowl? Like, I mean, that's a unique opportunity. So I feel like I need to at least take advantage of it and be well informed. And, you know, coming up at 2 o'clock, we'll get more into the Super Bowl from the Las Vegas angle. And, you know, I'm not exactly having Bob Beeler money out here. Oh. You know, I don't make Bob Beeler money. It's not enough for me to really be out here and really risking it all. I don't got that much. So if I do decide to play something down, I need to know the smart way to do it.
Okay. Well, don't look at me for the smart way to do it.
I mean, I'm looking at you for getting some of that Bob Beeler money, though.
You want me to give you something to go down there with?
If you have an idea, I'll be there. I can place whatever you want me to place. If you have some ideas of what you want to risk for yourself, you can give me the money, and I'll walk up and place it for you.
I'll think about it.
Gotcha.
I'll think about it. Eagles-Patriots, I don't know if we are the only show outside of Philadelphia, but both of us think the Eagles are going to win the game. A little bit different. I think the Eagles are going to win a close game towards the end, hanging on. And you think it's going to be a fairly decisive win for the Eagles.
It's going to be a house call. It's going to be 38-17 is what I have right now. The Eagles blowing out the Patriots. I haven't seen one prediction. Although Paul Jolovitz, who is a Philadelphia Sports Talk radio host, who was on the show yesterday, who also didn't think that the game would be particularly close and the Eagles would get a blowout win. I haven't seen many predictions that have the Eagles by 20-plus points. So I do feel like I'm on a little bit of an island with this one. However, I do think it's more fun for people to predict close games, and it feels more safe for you to predict a close game. And that's what I think you're going. You're going in the route of you don't want to look silly come Monday.
I'm picking the Eagles to win 27-20. And when I've looked at the Patriots games, the last couple of big games, Jaguar game, Falcon game last year, the opposing team has had the Patriots on the ropes and hasn't gone for the jugular, hasn't put them away, and allowed Tom Brady to rise from the dead and bring the Patriots back. To me, that is my biggest worry in this game, because the only advantage I think the Patriots have on the player side is Tom Brady at quarterback over Nick Foles. Nick Foles at one of the press conferences talked about one of the areas where I think the Eagles will be faring better than the Jaguars and the Falcons, and it's their let's go for the throat mentality. When they have them down, they're going to go for it. And Foles credited head coach Doug Peterson.
A lot of confidence. I mean, Coach Peterson is an aggressive play caller, and that shows with how many times we've gone for it on fourth and short. And, you know, he has confidence in our entire offense to execute and our O-line to, you know, to get that penetration to, you know, get the first down in those situations. So for us to have a head coach that's that aggressive, I love playing for a coach like that.
And I think against the Patriots, you have to try to do everything you can. Both the Jaguars and Eagles had the ball late in the half, up in their championship games. The Jaguars actually had more time and more timeouts left than the Eagles did. They sat on the ball. Could have used maybe 3 points. Who's to say they would have got it, but they didn't try for it.
You can't get it if you don't try.
We're backed up on their own 20-yard line. and they ran several plays, coupled to Jay Ajayi on swing passes. The next thing you know, they have a field goal, and they extend their lead, and they get the ball to start the third quarter. I think that mentality is a mentality that is needed to beat the Patriots.
And I'm confident it will be there because Doug Peterson, in his 2 years as the Eagles coach, this has been what they do. They go for it on fourth downs at positions where other coaches don't make those kind of calls. They push the envelope inside the red zone. They won't kick the long field goal or do the short punt. They'll go for it. They've even gone for it at times within their own 50. I am not worried about Doug Peterson suddenly getting conservative. I think he's going to be pedal to the metal. So if you're confident that he'll have that kind of approach, why aren't you picking the Eagles to win by more? The only thing that you're worried about is Doug Peterson getting conservative. If you don't think he'll get conservative, then go out there and pick the Eagles to win it by more points.
I am not picking the Eagles to win it by more points because I am not that confident that Nick Foles that showed up last week against Minnesota is going to show up this week against New England.
I'll give you some reasons to feel confident, whether you want to do it with Nick Foles or be confident in more other areas that the Eagles have advantages over the Patriots. I'll make up for the difference and allow them to win by at least three possessions. The Patriots' defense is not that good. It certainly isn't great. In fact, in DVOA, they were ranked 31st. The NFL is 32 teams. The defense was one of the worst in the NFL by any metric the first month of the year, when they actually faced three good offenses. Since then, they faced the Bucs, the Jets twice, Atlanta in a game that was all foggy and nobody could actually see, Miami twice, the Bills twice, Raiders, Broncos, and, of course, the Steelers. Is it more of a product of them all of a sudden correcting things on defense and them being solid? Or is it the fact that their opponents got a lot weaker as the season went on and the quarterbacks they were facing were a lot weaker and the offenses were less potent than it was at the beginning of the year? I'm tending to think that the Patriots defense, when they face a good offense, might be closer to what they were the first month of the year when we were saying, like, this is one of the worst defenses in football versus it was in the last couple of months of the year when their opponents got a lot weaker. People point to the improvement. I think it's more of a product of the schedule getting easier, including the playoffs, when it was the Marcus Mariota conservative Titans offense and the Doug Marrone-led Jacksonville Jaguars with Blake Bortles trying to not mess things up. That's not exactly the Philadelphia Eagles coming into this game.
I also think the defense has been helped out a lot by the Patriots offense. They average more plays per drive than any team playing in football. The defense has only faced 172 possessions this year, and that's partly because of the Patriots possessing the ball and the fact that they're very careful with it. Mm. Patriots number two in fewest turnovers given away. So I think the New England defense is one that really hasn't been tested, as you say, by lack of quality opponents, and I say because the Patriots offense has done a good job not putting them in bad spots, not putting them in short field spots where earlier in the season they got killed.
Regardless, the Eagles are the better defense. They are a top five defense this year, and generally the better defenses have done better in Super Bowl settings. I will mention that the Patriots in the Super Bowl, their defense tends to leak a little bit. In fact, the only two times in this most recent run that they've held their opponents in the Super Bowl below their scoring average was 2007 and 2011. Both of those were against the Giants and ended up losing those games. So generally, these get to be a little bit more high scoring, and at least the defense leaks a little bit. And if it does against this Philadelphia team, and you let the offense start rolling, that sense is a big problem. Now, you're worried about the quarterback mismatch, right? Like, that was one of the things that you're concerned
Absolutely.
About, the difference between Nick Foles and Tom Brady. Well, for me, I've said it on this show, the best way to measure quarterback play, I feel like, is yards per attempt, because that is like how much yardage are you getting out of a general passing play. The best, if you look at like the end of the year stats, the best quarterbacks will be up there in yards per attempt. Well, of the five largest differences in quarterback yards per attempt going into a Super Bowl, the worst quarterback has won four of the five times. So it goes to show you, quarterback isn't everything when you get into this game. In fact, Foles has the advantage of going against the worst defense of the two. Brady has to face the tougher defense across the board, And Belichick, the one thing that he likes to do on defense is he takes away your number one weapon, whether it's like Julio Jones with the Falcons or Antonio Brown with the Steelers. He always goes and takes away the number one guy. Well, the Eagles' offense is way too diverse for you to simply just take away the number one guy and expect to stop that. They're built more like the Kansas City Chiefs' offense, which over the years in the AFC has actually given the Patriots the most challenge out of anybody in that conference. Doug Peterson, of course, coming from Kansas City. So whether it's the running game or Zach Ertz or the multiple receivers that they have, it's just not one offense where if you take away something that they don't have a counter to it. Philadelphia is much too diverse.
I'm going to give you two things that I'm going to be looking for in this Super Bowl. One for the Patriots, one for the Eagles. For the Patriots, it's can Rob Gronkowski play at the high level? The Eagles have had trouble with tight ends. Tight ends is the position that has given the Eagles the most trouble with this season. Kelce from Kansas City, Jordan Reed from Washington, Evan Engram twice from the Giants have had big games against him. The Eagles have not had a big answer for teams with good tight ends. The only touchdown scored by the Vikings was to the tight end Rudolph. If Gronk plays and Gronk plays well, I think he will be by far and away the Patriots' best weapon. Now for the Eagles side, to me pressure is key. In the two Super Bowl losses on plays that Brady was passing, when they determine there's pressure, and I don't mean blitz, but when he faces pressure, if the number of plays goes 40% or higher that he faces pressure, he has lost both Super Bowls. Mm. If it stayed under 40%, he has won those Super Bowls. The Eagles don't blitz a whole lot, about the middle of the league. They have not historically blitzed a lot against veteran quarterbacks, but I think where the Eagles' defensive line is going to be key is they have a number of people they rotate in and out. I thought the Falcons were killed last year because they got tired at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. Even if Brady's trying to make his comeback and his team's on the field, I think the Eagles have enough depth in the defensive line to get after him.
We're on the same page here, and I'll give you another aspect of the pass rush, because again, Brady can get happy feet. In fact, in the Super Bowls in the past, the Seahawks made him miserable until Cliff Avril got hurt. Brady threw two picks in that game, including a red zone interception, again, because of pressure. The Falcons' pressure, you mentioned the impact it had on that game until they got worn down, and Brady threw a pick six in that game, so he has not nearly been flawless in these Super Bowls. And the Giants, you mentioned, beat him twice, and that was all about getting that pressure. 40 was the number, 40%. Was a number that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I'll give you another reason why I'd be concerned about the Eagles' pass rush. The Super Bowl between the Broncos and the Seahawks at MetLife a few years ago, that place was completely crowded with Seahawks fans to the point where Peyton Manning had to go to his team and say, yo, we need to go with the silent count. And with the silent count, they had still no answer to stop the pass rush, because when you go to the silent count, now the defense can start to guess it off the ball. And I think in this game in Minnesota, the Eagles are just going to absolutely dominate the crowd. And if that is an increase on the pass rush, because the crowd is largely Philadelphia and it forces New England to have to go to something more silent, that's going to be another aspect of the game in which the Eagles' pass rush plays a factor. So a lot of the recipe to me adds up to a Philly win.
Talk a little bit more about this game throughout the show. Join the big game party with Sports Radio The Ticket at Dave and Buster's on Sunday. Win a 3-day, 2-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. Steelhead tickets, winner's circle prizes, and much more. Winners will be announced at halftime with Caves, JP, and the Ticket Chick. And again, that's a 3-day, 2-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. $300 at the MB Steakhouse and a pair of VIP joint concert passes. It's the big game at Dave and Buster's off Milwaukee Sunday with Sports Radio The Ticket.
Up next, you guys are giving your thoughts on the Super Bowl. I'll give mine, including what the impact it could have on both starting quarterbacks, plus just how good of a game a former Bronco could have. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
It's the Fish Tank with Michael Fisher.
The producer of this show comes up with three topics. He really believes them at the bottom of his heart.
On Sports Radio The Ticket.
Right, it is time for a Fish Tank, a little bit of a different time because we've got a guest coming up at 2 o'clock here to talk more about the Super Bowl. So, of course, that's what I'll focus on. And we'll start with the starting quarterback for the New England Patriots. Everybody knows him, Tom Brady. He already has most Super Bowl wins by any quarterback in NFL history, most Super Bowl appearances by any quarterback in NFL history. But he wants to maintain his spot as top postseason quarterback of all time. He needs to beat the Eagles. If he loses, that means he's 3-3 as a favorite in Super Bowls. His loss would be to a backup quarterback with a team that went undefeated in the regular season and then to the sixth seed in the NFC. It would mean his best achievement would be beating the Rams early in his career when it was less him and more his coach. And losing to a team with a backup quarterback would all but prove that last year was really the Falcons' fault and that Brady just got lucky. If he goes to 5-3 all-time in Super Bowls, I think it's less impressive than Bradshaw and Montana, both of who were 4-0. So, Chris, sink or swim, Brady, if he wants to be the top postseason QB of all time, he's got to beat the Eagles. He can't lose.
Sink. House money at this point. He's 40 years old. He already has 5 Super Bowl championships. At this point, he's just trying to add on to the lead that he already has over the rest of the pack. He's doing things that we didn't think 40-year-olds could do and put your team in contention year in and year out. If he wins, it's his 6. If he doesn't, he still has 5. That's fine. Losing the Super Bowl is still better than not getting to the Super Bowl at all. That's the whole thing about your record in championships. So what, you should lose before you get to the championship because that's better? No, it's better to lose in the Super Bowl than it is to lose in the first round of the playoffs. Stop being silly with the reasoning of, oh my goodness, his winning percentage in the Super Bowl has gotten lower. He's getting to Super Bowls. That's great. So sink.
Bob?
Well, I'm conflicted on this one. I do agree with you, Fish, that Atlanta and Seattle were 2 games he should have lost. He probably should be 3-4 in Super Bowls right now instead of 5-2. I'm also conflicted because if I have one quarterback to make one drive for a win, I'm not taking Tom Brady. I'm taking Joe Montana. So that's not changing my opinion of who I want for one drive one time. But if you're looking at body of work, if you're looking for who has the best resume, I agree with Chris. I don't think that whether he wins or loses this Super Bowl, it changes it. I agree. I would rather be the Buffalo Bills and lose 4 times in a row in the Super Bowl than to lose in the AFC Championship 4 times in a row and not get there. You at least have the fun of winning the AFC Championship if you were a Buffalo Bills fan. So again, I'm a little bit conflicted because I still think I'd rather have Joe coming down the field for me as opposed to Tom Brady in the last moments. But body of work, Tom Brady, number one. I don't know how you can take it away from him, so I'll sink.
Going to the quarterback on the other side of the field, and no, I don't mean Carson Wentz since he's not playing, but Nick Foles. If he wins this game, he will sign for more money than Kirk Cousins this offseason. Now, it's a little tricky because technically Foles is under contract with the Eagles for the next 5 years. However, there is a write-in in his contract. If he's still with the Eagles come this time next year, his contract automatically voids and he becomes a free agent, meaning more than likely the Eagles would trade him to a team who would then re-sign him for more money so he's their long-term starter. Biggest thing is Nick Foles, if he wins this game, will have a Super Bowl win, which adds to your legacy and adds to your contract value. Just look at Joe Flacco and coming off a 38-7 beatdown of the best defense in the NFL this year. Meanwhile, Kirk Cousins, he's played in 1 playoff game. He's never thrown less than 11 picks as a full-time starter. Foles shows he can take care of the ball. So, Bob, sink or swim. Foles wins the Super Bowl. He'll be richer than Kirk Cousins after the offseason.
Might be richer in the sense that he won't have to buy a drink or dinner in Philadelphia again. But, no, I think I'll sink this one. I think Kirk Cousins is going to be the guy that's going to break the bank. He's a free agent at the right time. And he's going to be able to pick and choose not only his money but his spot. I think people are going to look at the long body of work of Nick Foles and realize that when he has been, other than that 1 year with Chip Kelly, I think he's not going to be the guy that people are going to look to build on with a big contract at this point. I think they're going to make a movie out of Nick Foles' season, probably going to be done by the Disney folks, and I think we already have the name for it. Unfortunately, it's already been taken, but Cinderella Man, he's going to be the guy that is going to get it done, but then the clock's going to strike 12, and he'll be back to a backup.
Chris?
I'm going to sink, too. Nick Foles, I'm not convinced that the Eagles are going to sever ties with him because I don't know if the value that you can get is worth having a competent backup coming off of a quarterback with a torn ACL. And that's what Wentz will be at the beginning of next year, a quarterback coming off of a torn ACL. Cousins has had multiple years of sustained relative success, and he's already made more money in his career than Nick Foles will probably ever see in his career. And I'll expect Kirk Cousins to take a pay cut and make less money than he has in the past. So I'm going to go with Kirk.
And finally, there'll be a pair of former Broncos in the Super Bowl. One of them won't be playing with Shane McClellan on IR for the Patriots, but one will be playing, and that's Jay Ajayi. And Ajayi, most likely the starting running back for the Eagles. He's not listed as it, but he's taken 33 of their 64 rushing attempts in the playoffs. And I believe Ajayi will have the most rushing yards in a Super Bowl in the last 15 years, going back to the 2004 Super Bowl. That number would be 113 yards. Back in between the Colts and the Bears, Ajayi has averaged 5.8 yards a carry since joining the Eagles. The key to stopping Tom Brady is keeping him off the field. That means Ajayi is going to get the ball a bunch. He's the primary running back for the Eagles and the Patriots, by the way. Bottom third rushing defense during the regular season. So, Chris, Jay Ajayi will break 113 yards in the Super Bowl, sink or swim?
I'm going to swim. I'm right with you. I think the Eagles have a big run early and get up, and I think they play with the lead throughout the entire game. I think the pass rush, again, makes Brady make some mistakes and puts pressure on the Patriots offense, so they don't get much rolling. And the Eagles, when they're up in the second half, they'll be able to run the ball. Ajayi gets most of the cleanup work for Philadelphia. He not only is a steady runner, he can come up with a big run every now and then, too. I also think his role in the offense is similar to Kareem Hunt with Kansas City in that first game of the year. And remember what Kansas City did in that first game of the year with Kareem Hunt? He ran for 148 yards against the Patriots. He also caught 100 yards worth of receiving against New England. I think Jay has a huge game, and yes, he gets more than 113 yards.
Bob?
I'm going to swim with this as well. And the only reason that I was thinking maybe I would sink it is some of the yards that I think Jay is going to get is going to be similar to what he got against the Viking on some swing passes, which kind of act like runs. I was shocked in the last 15 years that the most rushing yardage gained by one player was only 113 yards. To me, that seems like kind of a low total. You would have expected somebody maybe to, you know, break off one of those 50, 60-yard runs and then have a pretty good game the rest of the way and take their total up closer to, say, 150. I understand it's only been one 200-yard game in the Super Bowl, but I thought maybe the number would be higher than 113. I agree with Chris. If you watched the Viking game last week when they were trying to run the clock out against Minnesota, he was the running back of choice. My biggest complaint watching Doug Peterson and the Eagles down the stretch is sometimes when Jay has gotten a little bit hot, they've switched running backs a little too quickly. That may be what I think they may need to stick with Jay a little bit more. I think he's their best chance for explosiveness at the running back position. So swim with Jay, 113 yards. Super Bowl will be on Sports Radio The Ticket. Kevin Harlan and Boomer Esiason are going to have the call starting at 4:35 on Sunday. Mike Holmgren, Tony Boselli, and Ed Werder will contribute as well. Cardinals wide receiver Larry Fitzgerald and Patriots quarterback Tom Brady will appear on the pregame show starting at noon with Scott Graham and Kurt Warner. If you can't watch it, listen to Sports Radio The Ticket, 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, your Super Bowl station. Up next in the update, what happened in the Mountain West last night while the Broncos were enjoying their bye. That's next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sure, let's take a sports update with the Mountain West update. While Boise State had their first bye in Mountain West Conference play, a couple teams were in action. That extended their conference record to 9-1 with a win over Fresno State, 102-92. Some other action, Wyoming beat Colorado State in double overtime. Utah State beat New Mexico. UNLV survived their home game against San Jose State. Boise State, of course, will take on UNLV Saturday at Taco Bell Arena.
So right now, Boise State is a half game behind Nevada. The Wolfpack is 8-1. Boise State is 8-2. To me, the surprise team in the league is Wyoming, third place now at 6-3. And well, you talk about a team that's, I don't want to say gotten lucky because you make your own luck sometimes, Chris, but and Fish. But they are now 6-0 on the season in overtime, 4-0 in overtime in the Mountain West.
Do they play a regulation game yet? Like, I feel like every time I watch them, it's in overtime. And, of course, Wyoming, the team that probably isn't as good a shape as a lot of teams because of the you know, high altitude that they play at. But what, the Boise State game, the Nevada game, this game, all overtimes for Wyoming. So, you know, they got the win. They remain, I guess, in contention, if you want to say that. I focused in on the Nevada game, and Fresno State had every opportunity to really take that game. They've had a lot of success in Reno before. They were documenting that on the broadcast, and they were in control of the game, or right with Nevada, step for step, until they really couldn't stop fouling in the second half. Like every take to the basket, Fresno State was a step behind and had to foul Nevada. They got to the point where they were in the bonus. And, you know, Cody Martin kept making the free throws. Caleb Martin had a lot of free throws, too. So if you can't keep Nevada off the line, you're going to have a really hard time beating them.
And another game I was slipping back and forth with the Nevada game with Fresno State was the UNLV-San Jose State game. And it looked like UNLV was smart last night. They went inside to Brandon McCoy, 22 points and 17 rebounds. did some research getting ready for the broadcast. In the non-conference games, which for UNLV, their first conference game was against Boise State, the leading shot taker in the non-conference season when UNLV had a very good record was Brandon McCoy. Jordan Johnson was way down the line. In the conference games, Jordan Johnson, the guard, has taken more shots than Brandon McCoy. I think UNLV, if you want to be really good, Houston and McCoy need to touch the ball every possession down. You got to go in to win if you're Vegas, and that's something they have not done a lot during the conference play.
Why are you giving them advice? They might be listening to the show. Now you just gave them the game plan, how they could be better against Boise State.
I'm just shocked that they've been foolish most of the time in conference play. Just absolutely shocked.
Something to keep an eye on in the Mountain West. Should Boise State and Nevada tie at the end of the regular season? With how the tiebreakers work, it would come down to who is higher in conference standings, New Mexico or Fresno State. If New Mexico is higher, Boise State would win the conference or get the number one seed. Fresno State higher, Nevada would get it. Right now, New Mexico a game ahead of Fresno State. So,
and that only is true as if both teams win out. If there are some other losses along the way, then it could change the deck a little bit. But that would be if Boise State would beat Nevada and if they both would win the other games without losing. The fact that New Mexico would be 2-0 under that circumstance for Boise State, but only 1-0 for Nevada, or vice versa. Fresno, Nevada would be 2-0 against, and Boise State would only be 1-0 against.
Speaking of Boise State, good things seem to happen in pairs for former Broncos. There's two Broncos in the Super Bowl, and two Broncos will be heading to the NFL Combine. Yesterday, Cedric Wilson announced that he had gotten and received his NFL Combine invite, joining Leighton Vander Esch, who got his earlier this week. They'll both have their workouts in the Combine March 3rd. Wilson had a pretty busy pre-draft season. He was in the Senior Bowl, and then tomorrow he will participate in the State Farm All-Star Challenge. So,
I wonder if you could quantify how much money going to the Combine versus not going to the Combine is worth. I mean, you'll never know, because somebody who didn't go to the Combine, you can't figure what they would have gotten and vice versa. But I've got to believe that that's a pretty good chunk of change for both Leighton and for Cedric, because now they're going to be able to show themselves off in front of all 32 teams.
Yeah, I mean, but for some people, I guess the Combine hurts you, right? Like, if you don't have a good showing or you don't have a good interview, the Combine, it's not one of those things where it can only help you. Like, you can't have a bad performance.
You can't, but I think if you're somebody like them, not somebody that you're thinking of as a surefire number one, somebody that's coming out early and somebody that's played 2 years of FBS football, I think I would, if I was them, given the choice.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't see them turn it down, did you?
Oh, no. You absolutely, if given the choice, you do it, and you just expect to perform well, and you do all you can, too. But, like, you know, you can come up with some examples of combines turning people into number one overall type picks, or examples of combine really hurting people's quote unquote draft stock, which is a term I still don't like.
Somebody may not run well.
Yeah.
Somebody may not lift well. Somebody might not be feeling well. But if you know yourself, and knowing Cedric and knowing Leighton, I would be very surprised if the off-the-field stuff, if they don't help their cause a lot.
Well, last year, Kevin Durant took less money in order to ensure that the Golden State Warriors could re-sign Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant might be put in a similar position this year. It was according to Chris Haynes of ESPN, LeBron James, who is expected to become a free agent this upcoming free offseason, has said the Warriors could be an option, would have a seat at the table, should they clear enough room for a max deal to sign LeBron James.
Why would they do that? Why would the Warriors do that?
Why would the Warriors want LeBron James?
Well, no, I understand why you want him, but why would you, with all your other contracts, why would you think that you can clear a max deal for him? I don't see that as possible. You?
It's possible.
Like, so who would you have to jettison to get him?
I actually don't think it's unrealistic that, like, Paul George could consider them. I think they, in a dark horse way, think that Paul George is a target. Paul George could go there. They'd have to do a lot of gymnastics. I think they could, in a way, keep the top four, being Durant, Curry, Draymond, and Klay. But you'd basically have to, like, renounce everybody, and it gets really complicated within the salary cap. But just think that there might be an outside way, given some help from some other teams with some trades and the like, that they could do it. Now, is this going to happen? Absolutely not. This isn't anything that you should really believe. LeBron James is not going to the Warriors. LeBron is smart. His camp is smart. They leak things. Chris Haynes is one of the guys who is very connected to LeBron's camp, so it's clearly coming from James's side.
So, all right, where are we? We are, what, about a week or so from the NBA trade deadline? So, let's look at the environment. Cleveland is really struggling right now. LeBron's putting it out there that he might consider joining a team that is really, really good right now. To me, it sounds like LeBron is putting pressure on Cleveland's front office to sell the future, forget that Brooklyn pick that you have, and do whatever you can to make this year's roster good enough for me to win right now or else I'm gone. That's what it sounds like to me more than anything else.
I read something this morning that said Dan Gilbert may be thinking about selling.
Stephen A. Smith said that on First Take, and ESPN didn't even think highly enough of the report to even like put it on the bottom line or anything like that. So I really don't know what to do with that. I mean, it's just Stephen A. saying stuff, but he knows, you know, he's well connected within the NBA, so maybe you should realize that and report it. But according to ESPN, it wasn't even serious enough for them to even report. I think also part of this is LeBron and his camp maybe leaking something about the Warriors, so they might have a little bit of internal conflict. Things are a little bit too dandy in Warrior land right now. Maybe they start to think, wait a minute, will they get rid of me if they bring in LeBron? And is my roster spot? What is my future? So anything that could improve Cleveland while at the same time put a little bit of doubt in the mind of the Warriors is something that benefits LeBron James. So that's where I think this is coming from, and it really has no bearing on LeBron actually going to Golden State.
Well, the Houston Astros run to the World Series was made possible by tanking in order to get some high draft picks who helped pave the way for the Astros. And four of those five picks from 2011 to 2015 that they made in the first round had major impacts in their win over the Dodgers. So the one that didn't, Mark Apple, announced today that he is taking an indefinite break from Major League Baseball. Apple had been traded to the Phillies in exchange for closer Ken Giles back in 2015 and designated for assignment by the Phillies in November. Should he remain quote-unquote retired, Apple would become the third number one pick to not reach the majors.
It's a strange tale with him, and like goes to show you the idea of getting all the number one picks or early picks. You don't have to hit on them all. You just got to hit on a few of them, a decent percentage, and all of a sudden it works out for you. But imagine if he turned into the guy that everybody thought he could be when Houston drafted him number one overall. Now you're talking about another weapon that the Astros would have had to work with. But I hope he figures it out, because I remember, like, I was covering, you know, minor league baseball at the time that Apple was drafted, and people thought really highly of him. Like, they were thinking, like, guaranteed number two or number one starter at the time, and it really certainly hasn't panned out that way.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, he was a first round twice. He was a first rounder, did not sign.
No, you're thinking of Brady Aiken. Apple did sign with the Astros.
Apple did sign at the end. He held out, and my apologies then. But you look at the four guys that got taken around him, 11, Springer, 12, Correa, Apple was 13, Brady Aiken was 14, Bregman was 15. So Bregman, Correa, Springer, last time I looked, they were the core of the Astro team. So even if they had called out the name Chris Lewis, Mike Fisher, or Bob Beeler in that 2013 draft, that's still a pretty good draft.
Can I get a signing bonus? Oh, yeah, I could produce as much with the Astros as he did. But if I have that signing bonus, I can now all of a sudden have more money to spend in Vegas this week.
And just a fun little Apple fact in the sports update, if you're ever at a trivia night and the question is the player drafted before Chris Bryant, that would be Mark Apple.
It's another Costa Vida sweet deal this Friday at 9 a.m. That's tomorrow at KTIK.com. Get five $10 gift certificates for only $25. One of our most popular sweet deals of the year at Costa Vida. Each tortilla is handcrafted daily and served hot. Their sweet pork and shredded beef are slow cooked for several hours, all with the freshest all-natural ingredients, resulting in intensely flavored meals. Costa Vida, the half-price sweet deal at KTIK.com. That's tomorrow morning at 9. Coming up in Quick Hits, James Webb faced Chris's favorite team. We'll see what Chris thought about that matchup. And Alabama, they don't have a quarterback commit. They battled with Boise State for a while. Who are they battling with now? You'll never guess. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
For me, it's always a lot of fun watching people you've seen, people you've met at Boise State play professionally, and one of them that's doing it right now is James Webb III. And he faced Chris's favorite team, the 76ers, who were the team that had him for a while but decided not to take him up to Philadelphia. So they opened the door for the Brooklyn Nets to get him. So what did you see from James Webb III watching the game?
Well, I had a couple, you know, good stints of minutes in the first half, one long stretch, second half a decent stretch as well. And it didn't score again, which, you know, we're still waiting for him to get on the board. But he got a couple of open looks from three, and that's the frustrating part, is that, like, you really need those to go in with your limited opportunity. And his form is good. He has good elevation on his jumper, like similar to Chandler Hutchison. Like, he has really built his jumper up into something that is a very repeatable motion and is a textbook form. He just hasn't really made one of those threes yet, and that's going to have to be what he does to survive in the league. He needs to be somebody who can defend threes and fours, survive out on the perimeter, and also provide enough in the interior to where you're not played off the floor, and then play off the ball by being able to be in the corners and hit threes. He got two corner threes that looked good but hit off the back of the rim, and also there was one play where the Nets had a 2-on-1 fast break. He was running opposite of D'Angelo Russell, who is, you know, former number three overall draft pick by the Lakers, and it was a perfect setup where D'Angelo Russell could have easily delivered a bounce pass to Webb for him to get an easy layup or a dunk for his first basket. But D'Angelo messed it up by, I mean, you know this, when you're running a 2-on-1, you should each get one of the wings and go on D'Angelo right down the middle of the court, which let the one guy be able to play two, and the pass was off of the guy's foot and out of bounds, so he just missed out on his first basket. He looks like he belongs. He runs fluidly. He looks like the James Webb that we all remember. He just hasn't scored yet.
I always think that sometimes in basketball, when you bring somebody in for a few minutes in each game and they're a young player, both at the collegiate level or at the pro level, they might be a little tighter trying to shoot because they feel that if you miss, you're going to come out of the game. Where if you're an established guy and you miss a couple shots, it might take you out for a minute or two, but they're going to bring you back in. Same philosophy in baseball. That's why I think sometimes it's tough for young players to be pinch hitters because they try too hard and they don't let the at-bat come to them. James will get the basket, and then I think after he gets the first one, he'll get more after that.
Topic number two.
Who is Alabama in a recruiting battle with for quarterback right now?
Well, they were in a recruiting battle with Boise State for Brock Purdy, along with Iowa State and Central Florida. Boise State moved on, looking at Purdy's list. He's not made a decision one way or another, so Alabama, I guess, is looking for other quarterbacks. So now they are going after someone that has been committed since June of 2017 to Princeton. Brevin White, 6'2", 185 pounds, out of Lancaster, California, has said he really wants to go to Princeton because they have a much better investment banking program than does Alabama. So we'll see if Nick Saban can talk Crimson Tide football and beat Princeton for him to go to.
Is there an anywhere academic program that is better at Alabama than at Princeton? Like, I don't know, but I wouldn't think.
Unless Alabama, because it's a big school, has it and Princeton doesn't
have it. But if Princeton has it and Alabama has it, I think, I don't know, just going out on a limb, but I think the Princeton one would be more highly regarded. I don't know. Maybe it's just a bold assumption on my part.
But where Saban might be able to take advantage, not knowing what White's family situation is, Ivy League is need-based. So you might get every single dime, or you might have to pay every single dime, or you're probably going to get somewhere in the middle, where Alabama, of course, can offer a full scholarship. But I find it interesting that Alabama does not have a quarterback committed for this recruiting class, and now they're tangling with Princeton to try to steal from the Ivy League, from the FCS non-scholarship Ivy League, to take a quarterback. We'll see if Brevin White stays with Princeton or goes with the Tide.
Topic number three.
All right, Chris, where would the all-unemployed team finish in the American League?
That's almost a question I want to bounce off of you more than I want to answer it myself. But I just want to read you the all-unemployed team. John Heyman, FanRag Sports, used to be with Sports Illustrated. This is what he came up with. So Eric Hosmer playing first base. I'm going to go slowly okay. So you can write this down. Neil Walker at second base. Eduardo Nunez at shortstop. Mike Moustakas at third base. J.D. Martinez, one of the outfielders. Carlos Gonzalez, another one. Carlos Gomez, the third outfielder. Jonathan Lucroy at catcher. Todd Frazier is the DH.
even have a bench here of Logan Morrison, John Jay, Jared Dyson, Matt Holliday, Chase Utley, Mark Reynolds, Lucas Duda, Melky Cabrera, Jose Bautista, and Miguel Montero. That's a lot of people. All right, pitching staff. Yu Darvish as the ace. Jake Arrieta is the number two. Alex Cobb, the third starter. Lance Lynn, the fourth starter. Andrew Kashner as the number five starter. The closer is Greg Holland. Tony Watson is the setup guy, with also available pitchers Jason Vargas, Jaime Garcia, Joaquin Benoit, Bud Norris, Jeremy Hellickson, Oliver Perez, Tyler Clippard. All right, so I kind of gave you an idea here of who's on the all-employed. If that team, again, of people without jobs, is in the American League, where are they?
Probably in the middle. Probably in the middle to maybe a little below the middle. I'll tell you what I like and what I don't like about the team. I like their starting rotation. You're going to put Darvish and Arrieta up at the top of the rotation. I think that's pretty good. If healthy, I think Greg Holland can be a good closer for you. But where I look at this team and say, you're going to fall defensively. Don't like Walker defensively at second. Nunez is a utility player. I don't want him as an everyday shortstop. Saw him play a lot of games for the Giants. Solid player, but not somebody you want as an everyday shortstop. And outfield defense to me would be hideous.
All right, Jared Dyson. We got to find him in there then.
Then put him in center field because Gomez better be an outstanding center fielder because Martinez and Gonzalez are not good defenders.
All right, so middle of the pack, you really think? That's a pretty good team
middle
right there.
Middle to bottom. I don't know. I just think that I don't like the construction. I think they give up way too many runs defensively.
Topic number four.
What was the most disappointing moment in Super Bowl history for you, and it was the only time you had money riding on it?
Yes, only one time. It's back in 1981. We were at Lake Tahoe in the summer. My dad got us tickets, got us three tickets, $10 apiece, to win the Super Bowl. We picked an AFC team that was really good. We picked an NFC team that was really good. And then he said, study and take a long shot. We looked. We saw the 49ers at 75-1. We laughed. 49ers hadn't been good in years. We saw the Cincinnati Bengals at 60-1. You know what? The Oilers, the Steelers are getting old. The Browns aren't any good. You know, they can maybe win the Central, the AFC Central at the time. $10 on the Cincinnati Bengals to win it all. Bengals win the Central. Bengals win their first playoff game. They win the cold game against the Chargers. Now they're playing the 49ers. You have a 60-1 against the 75-1. Growing up in Stockton, my brother and I were the only two people at our high school who were for the Bengals. We had 600 reasons why we wanted the Bengals to win that Super Bowl over the 49ers.
Oh, no.
They had four tries at the one-yard line in the second half to get in for a touchdown. The Bengals did not get in. That was the most disappointing Super Bowl moment for me.
Y'all didn't even think about hedging it at that point. You're that far along. You could bet on the 49ers in the game itself to kind of hedge it a little bit. But now you weren't about that?
Well, we weren't up there again.
Maybe if you had to redo it and you had those connections in Nevada, maybe.
But it was
work.
The most disappointing Super Bowl for me.
Dykes. Tears.
Yes, exactly. Up next, we're going to go to Minnesota. Ron Flatter from VEASAN is going to give us the skinny from both what it's like on the ground in Minnesota and also what Las Vegas thinks of the game. That's coming up next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Our goal in today's show is to make you more knowledgeable watching the Super Bowl and also to help Chris, who will be in Las Vegas this weekend with Boise State women's basketball. We have reached out to Ron Flatter, longtime friend with VSiN, which is the Vegas Sports and Information Network. He is co-host with Brent Musburger on My Guys in the Desert. He's going to help us. He's also in Minnesota. So from the desert to the frozen tundra, we welcome Ron Flatter to Idaho Sports Talk. Ron, how are you today?
What's the temperature there?
40s?
Yeah, not bad at all. 40s? What's the temperature there?
Five.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That doesn't sound as comfortable. But of the people who are braving it out there in Minnesota, how many of them are wearing that midnight green of Philadelphia, and how many people are wearing that red, white, and blue of the New England Patriots?
Chris, I saw a little more Philadelphia earlier in the week, but the thing with New England fans is this is my 13th Super Bowl, so I've been to a few New England Super Bowls, especially recently. and they tend to blend in a little bit. I don't know whether it's because their gear is more worn out or what, but the Philadelphia people seem to get here earlier, but I only mean that marginally. Today's the first day, typically, in a Super Bowl week that you start to see the fans come in. Most hotels and Super Bowl host cities have a four-night requirement for a minimum. And given what they charge for hotel rooms at Super Bowl cities, you tend to buy the minimum. So you're going to start to see the fans really pouring in probably tonight, and then it'll pick up steam really as the weekend goes along. I will say this, because the Vikings got drubbed by the Eagles, you maybe hear a little bit more attention paid to Eagles fans because of the collective gnashing of teeth by the local fans here about what happened 2 weeks ago.
Ron, when you've been around all week, is there a couple of stories that seem to be coming up more and more about the game that we want to pay attention to?
Well, the two, I would say, they both surround the Patriots. One, of course, is Rob Gronkowski. Now, we're going to have our final media availability with them in about an hour. And when that happens, we're going to see whether Gronkowski shows up or not. Now, he hasn't so far this week. The only time he faced reporters was coming out of a promotional thing for one of those video game deals, like a Madden situation or an EA Sports. Don't know which one it was, but he was competing in it. And then he emerged and was surrounded by a phalanx of reporters. And one of them, Josina Anderson at ESPN, elicited from Gronkowski a confirmation that he expects to play on Sunday, regardless of the situation going on now with concussion protocol. And let's face it, they have 2 weeks to get him through it. The best excuse for concussion protocol for Gronk right now is to get him out of all the media sessions, because the formal media sessions he's been able to skip because of concussion protocol. He's been limited in practice. He had the red jersey on last week that prevented players from hitting him. Took that red jersey off this week. So that tells me he's going to play. I think we're just going through all the falderall of just this concussion protocol situation. Not to diminish the seriousness of it, but I'm not so sure that if the game had been, say, yesterday, that he wouldn't have been out of concussion protocol anyway. And then the other thing, of course, is with the two coordinators, McDaniels and Patricia, who are going to be going off to the Colts and Lions to coach those teams as soon as the Super Bowl is over. How much are they going to be able to be focused on this game with some of their mind at least already off to Indianapolis and Detroit? They both insist they're all in for this game, but that's something of a factor that's getting talked about.
Ron Flatter joining us, Vegas Sports and Information Network here on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Now the first Vegas angle question, the line, I think, open at around 5.5, and now it's closer to 4 in favor of the Patriots. Why do you think the line has shrunk just a tad?
Gronk, I think, Chris, is one reason. People are hedging their bets right now on that. The number also being fat enough to where, you know, we're in that sort of soft range there. It's not 3, it's not 7, not a lot of real difference between, say, 4 and 5. It's at 4.5 at some places, 4 at others. So it depends on where you go. You can find the 4.5 with juice, for instance, at Coast, and other places. It's just the dime line. But I think that's the Gronk factor is one. And I think, too, that the Philadelphia defense, vis-a-vis the New England defense, if you compare those, I think fans and bettors are bullish on the Philadelphia defense, regardless of the fact they're facing a Hall of Famer, and maybe more than one, obviously, with the Patriots offense. But flip it the other way. The Patriots have not done that well in stopping the run this season. Their scoring defense is fine. I think it's number 5 in the league in terms of points allowed. But in terms of yards per play, they were second worst in the NFL overall and second worst against the run. And when you take a look at what Philadelphia has, with Jay Ajayi having coming over from Miami, and let's not forget a certain fellow who used to play for New England last year named LeGarrette Blount, who piled up the most yards for Philadelphia. Not a huge number, but certainly the most. If you look at it from that point of view, I think bettors are certainly going in on Philadelphia for that reason. Not all, and also there's the whole idea that you get 4 points, 4.5 points, a little bit of value from that standpoint as well. In a game, remember that New England, in its 5 Super Bowl wins, the Patriots' biggest blowout victory was last year, the 6-point game in overtime.
Ron Flatter joining us. He is with VSIN, Vegas Sports and Information Network. You can hear them on SiriusXM or go to VSIN.com. And, Ron, when you look at all the things that Vegas offers that you can put your money down and decide, the actual game itself, is that the most popular, or are some of these prop bets that are going to be offered for this game sort of coming and taking the thunder away from the actual game itself?
Well, the number, Bob, the number of prop bets is just mushroomed to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. And I think after a while, it just gets to be too cute. However, the proof is in the pudding, and the pudding is the money. And there are predictions this year that the prop bets for the first time will, in total dollars, exceed the bet on the sides. And by sides, of course, I mean, you know, you bet on just Philadelphia with the points, New England laying the points, or even on the total, the over-under being 48. The props apparently are going to exceed the bets on the game itself, just the straight bet. Now, remember that the Super Bowl, because it is the biggest sporting event we have all year, it attracts the most public money. The professional gamblers are outnumbered in terms of their dollars coming into the till. And this is the one time of year that public dollars mean more to what the line looks like than perhaps it would if you're just looking at professional dollars. One of the great myths, as I've learned in Vegas over the past year, is that they make the line to try to get equal dollars on either side of the line. That's not true. What they're really trying to do is try to attract the big money clients that these casinos have and get their money into the till. So the line is really drawn to attract that sort of a thing. Very rarely will you see games where you have a 50-50 split in terms of the money or even in terms of the tickets sold. So on this particular game, the public is going to hold more sway than the professional bettor. And so in that respect, that's going to be why the props are going to be so much more popular, because they're really the shiny object for folks coming into town. And they say, all right, yeah, that looks kind of fun. Will the New England Patriots have more points than Trey Young of Oklahoma, or one of those kind of a props? It's those kind of props are out there. To me, I don't like them. My favorite prop, if I'm going to play anything, is the MVP in the game, and I usually bet wide receivers for value. I think Danny Amendola is something like 25-1. I think that's tremendous value if you want to go in there, because occasionally, you know, wide receivers do get named MVPs in this game.
All right, Ron Flatter joining us, Vegas Sports and Information Network. Now, on that casual people heading into Vegas note, that will be me. I'm heading there with Boise State women's basketball. I'm heading over to Vegas a couple of days before the Super Bowl. So what trap should I avoid? Because it seems like you just sent out the warning message so like people like me don't make these silly decisions.
Yeah, stay away from the bets like, you know, who's going to win the coin toss, or will it be heads or tails, or, you know, will the anthem win, you know, when Pink sings the national anthem, will it exceed over, you know, a minute and 40 or 2 minutes or whatever they put on it? You know, I just think, you know, stay away from that. I think one of the things you want to do, have an informed opinion. And once you have that informed opinion, look for the value in it. And here's what I did. Now, you can't get the same numbers because I got these before I left town, but I liked Philadelphia for the reasons already stated. So I went in first on a money line bet on the Eagles, and I got them at 2-1. Now you can't get them at better than +165. And in fact, it's dropped down to even +155. Might even get all the way down to 3-2. So I bet Philadelphia at +200. That was about a quarter of my bankroll. I put half my bankroll on Philadelphia plus the points. And at the time, I got five. So I was getting Philadelphia and five. It was early last week. And then finally, what I did was I played a teaser. And this is going to be a popular play, Chris. Tease the line from 5 up to 11. Tease the point total from 48 down to 42. So I've got Philadelphia plus 11 teased into over 42. And so you get all of that. Again, you're looking for value. And look, if Philadelphia wins the game, I make out on all the tickets. Yeah. If New England wins the game, but not by a lot, then I can win on that. I can win on maybe one, possibly two tickets. Most of my money being, or actually half of my money being on the spread. So there's possibilities for middling it. I would look at that. And and while you're in town, I might even also have you be so bold as to get an app so you can make an in-game wager. So if the game is in your favor and you're already winning with your point of view, bet the other way to hedge it so you can guarantee yourself profit.
See, that's what the mistake Bob made a bunch of years ago when he bet on, apparently he had a future of the Bengals in the Super Bowl, and they got, or like before the season, they ended up getting to the Super Bowl, but he didn't hedge it. So, like, I mean, maybe kind of going a little inside here, but the teaser element of it, that is both having to come through for me to win, right?
Right.
Okay.
You have to go, both have to come through, and because you're moving the number, you're basically coming in at minus odds. So, like it's a minus 140 instead of a plus 110, but you put them together and then you can actually get the money on it.
Interesting. All right. I've taken notes now at this point. So I think I'm ready for this. Now, all right, as for props, because I know some people do like them, and you said they're probably not the most advantageous for actually making money, but what is like some of the more outrageous props that you've seen up there on the board?
Well, the one that's going to be popular around Las Vegas is having to do with the Las Vegas Golden Knights. And they're playing, I forgot who they're playing on Sunday. I know they're here in Minnesota tomorrow, by the way. But they'll put a prop up like, what will be higher, New England's point total or the number of shots by the Golden Knights in the game that they'll play that day? Hmm. And I thought, okay, well, that's interesting. My problem with those shot props in hockey is, you know, what's a shot? Sometimes a puck will come rolling in toward the goalie on the net, and they'll call that a shot. So that's a little bit hinky. But some of the ones that always come into play that you always have, they'll say a particular golfer in the golf event of the day, and they'll say, okay, will he be more under par than, say, the Philadelphia Eagles will score in positive points, something like that. So those are the ones. Honestly, if I've tamped down my enthusiasm for prop bets, that also might tell you that, I'm not necessarily the guy to ask about what the best props are. But those are the ones you tend to see. The national anthem one and how long it will last, that one is always out there. And I just think, that's one of those deals where if you're an insider, you can show up at rehearsal the night before. And not a lot of people get to, but it's not unheard of for people to know what the timing is on it. And then they'll go ahead and put the bet down accordingly. Don't expect me to be among those people.
Ron, thanks so much. Enjoy the Super Bowl, and I guess more importantly, when you're out and about, stay warm if it's 5 degrees.
Yeah, it's really fun, Bob, because what I've been doing is with a few of my associates here, we light big metal trash cans on fire, stand around them, and sing doo-wop. So it's a wonderful scene here in the Twin Cities.
All right, Ron Flatter, VSiN in Minnesota. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Chris.
And that is Ron. And his studios are at the South Point, which is where you're going to be staying. So you have to check them out.
Yeah, no doubt. You got to give me his number, too. I got to make sure I can hit him up and be like, okay, let me make sure I know what I'm doing here. I get up to the table.
Get a free round of Eagle Hills Golf when you attend the Boise Golf and Travel Show next week on Friday, February 9th through Sunday, the 11th. It's out at Expo Idaho. Demo the newest equipment from 8 golf manufacturers at the wide world of golf and get some great travel ideas as well. Purchase online ahead of time and receive a bonus offer from Timberstone, Hacker's Heaven, and TaylorMade. Go to BoiseGolfShow.com, and it's sponsored by your local Toyota dealers and Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. We're going to try to get Chris ready for this weekend. We'll give him our suggestions. Maybe you've got some as well on the Commercial Tire text line at 208-424-9300. We'll see what Chris really wants to do when he gets to Vegas next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Chris will be headed to Las Vegas this weekend to cover Boise State women's basketball. And by the way, Vegas, Boise State, Wyoming, one other, like right there together,
yeah,
on the women's side.
It's all jumbled up. Wyoming lost yesterday. UNLV won. UNLV now in first. Boise State can knock them off, get the season sweep, and then pretty much go ahead of them. So it is really in the Mountain West for women's basketball right now a circus.
And on the men's side, it's kind of a two-team race with Wyoming that's kind of lurking there right now in third place. So that brings Chris to Las Vegas. We send him down here. He'll cover the game. Talking to Ron Flatter, VSiN, their studio's located where you're going to be staying, so that'll make it good. You can go take a look and see what they've got going. So what do you think? You think you're going to go Eagles because you've said that.
Mm-hmm.
What about some of the other things? I would think that to watch games, the idea of the prop bet is much like the squares, you know, where you get a square and you're rooting for the Eagles to have a 3 at the end of their number and the Patriots to have a 4, and you want it to sit there for the fourth quarter. I would think the reason the prop bets are popular is because it gives you things to look for during the course of the game.
Yeah, and it could also keep just fans who aren't necessarily big-time football fans engaged in things that happen too, right? Like the national anthem, Gatorade color, that could stump on the coach's head. So, like, those type of things, I suppose,
and I think
interesting too.
And I think Ron made a great point. This is one of the few events that the average Joe determines the lines more than the actual somebody that's studying it, because it's a lot of people just watching for fun.
Yeah, and I don't know how a professional gambler does it make them – it sounded like from that, and I didn't get a chance to follow up on the question, does it make it more advantageous for the professional gambler, or does it make it more difficult for the professional gambler when you have more of the public involved in this? Does it make it easier for them to make money off of it, or does it just make it more difficult to read, therefore it's tougher for the professional gambler to make money off?
They say at Las Vegas that the professional people playing blackjack don't like playing blackjack with you and I, because you make the wrong call on a card, you change what they're going to get or what the dealer's going to get.
Yeah.
So I would think maybe it would muck it up a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I might figure. But so he was giving me some of these things, like a teaser with moving the line up to 11 and then getting the point total, the 42 and over or something like that.
So it benefits you if you're going over, but it sounds like you don't make as much money as if you bet each one of them individually, correct?
Correct, I think. I need to listen back to the interview. Like, that's the thing. He was going so fast.
He knows
I need to
it.
Literally
it.
Like, go back and replay it and then be able to kind of understand it better.
Tim has a suggestion for you, and then we've got a text from Darren and Kuna as well. Tim, welcome to Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris.
Hello, gentlemen. I hope you're enjoying your spring afternoon. My prop bet for Chris is I've always had good luck with the over-under.
Okay.
And also the turnover and over-under.
Interesting. So what the over-under, what are you feeling for this? By my score prediction, I'm saying over, because I think the Eagles, in a way, almost get the over-under by themselves by getting 38. So I'm going with the over for this.
I do like the over on this game, and I also like the over on the turnovers, because total turnovers, because I think Foles could get out there and get a little nervous. And, you know, the Lewis tends to have fumble problems. So I think that over on turnover margin could be there as well.
Gotcha. Do you know the number? I don't even know what the number
is. I heard
is
it was three, or three and a half, or whatever that is.
Gotcha.
And that which seems high, but that's, you know, two fumbles and a pick, you know.
Yeah, Brady has been turnover prone in Super Bowls for somebody who isn't usually turnover prone when it comes to regular season. All right, that's something else that I'll at least write down and consider. Appreciate it.
And you always get that one turnover at the end of the game where they're trying to push to score whichever team's behind.
That's true.
You always, that's pretty much.
That's good, good stuff. Point. Good advice.
Good point. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Darren and Kunis is his two big rules. Never bet more than you're willing and comfortable to walk away losing, which I think is a very good advice. The big, beautiful casinos are built with other people's money. That's absolutely true. And two, be sure you split your winnings with him.
Are you willing to cover some of the losses if it doesn't go that way? See, I don't know if you're as willing to jump in there and cover
I think
some
Darren's
losses.
Philosophy is like my old broadcast partner, Jack Lehman, used to say, they're with you win or tie.
Yeah, exactly. The loss, not as much. All right, so I'm really smart with it. Is like I'll have a certain number that I'll be able to, like, all right, $100, for example. All right, let me spread this $100 that I have to play with in different ways for me to have at least an investment on the game. Now, I'm just wondering, do you think it's smarter for me to go the $100 in just one or two different areas? Or with the $100, spread it out over a bunch of different, like, props, turnovers, you know, first half, who gets the first reception, Gatorade color if you wanted to mix it in. Should I go more all in with the strategy of the $100 or so with a couple of the ones I feel really confident in? Or should I spread it out amongst a lot of different choices?
I think it comes down to, are you wanting to have fun or you want to make money? I think if you're goal is, you know what, I think it's going to be a fun experience, make the game better to watch. I think you want more things out there.
Okay.
But I think if you feel strongly about some things where you might figure, you know what, I can double or triple my money, and that's what your goal is, then I think you want to pick a couple things that you think you're really sharp on. Because I think, as Ron may have alluded to, I think the prop bets have a tendency more to go either way.
Yeah.
I think that you might get good odds on it. Like, if you're going to pick the MVP, if you hit the right person, you might get 8-1, 10-1, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also more variables where, you know, if you're picking somebody to win by X amount of money or X amount of points, you're either going to win or you're going to lose, but you might have a better chance to win that by knowledge.
Now, how about like ones that compound itself? Like, I'm looking at this and just skimming over some of the props, the ones I like. Eagles +3 in the first half. Because if the game goes the way I think it will, with the Eagles kind of controlling it throughout, I think they'll be winning by more than 3 at halftime.
Well, you only have to be losing by 2.
Yeah, that's true. Eagles winning the game +160. That's just if I take the Eagles to win money line.
Mm-hmm.
So if I think the Eagles are going to win, maybe at that. Eagles scoring over 21. I think that's their over-under number. Yeah. If I think they're going to win, I probably should go in that direction too. Now, here's one that I looked on the board. Eagles win by 19-24 points. I'm out here as being one of the few people who say the Eagles are going to win it a blowout, at least 3 scores. My final score prediction was 38.
I would hate the fact that they won by 28. If you bet them 19-24,
they win by 28. Win by a little bit more. But if I picked them to win by 21 points, that is 25-1.
That's pretty good.
Like,
that's pretty good.
That's the one where I'm really
I think you might need to put something on that.
Yeah, because if I'm really going to be out here putting my reputation on it, might as well put a little bit of cheddar on it as well. Now, my favorite one in here that I found, and I don't know if you can like go to any casino and find that, but Eagles touchdowns in the game or Embiid blocks the Saturday before the Super Bowl. So Joel Embiid blocks or Eagles touchdown. That's ultimate Philly.
How many
right
does he
there.
Usually get? What's
the
average?
Averages are slightly under 2, I believe.
Yeah, he could get a. I don't know who they're playing.
They play Indiana.
I don't know enough about Indiana to know.
That's.
It's funny. They always pick those things that, like, well, it could go either could way. Go.
They know how to split it, but that's the ultimate Philly one. I don't know. I think the Eagles are going to score a lot of touchdowns, but I hope B gets a lot of blocks, too, because I'm all Sixers.
Dan, originally from Pennsylvania. I'm assuming Dan from PA means Dan in Pennsylvania. You're from Philly, man. Go all in with the Eagles.
Take the points. Okay. We'll see.
But if you think they're going to win.
I think they're going to win. Maybe it's the best to, again, do what our man Ron said, and maybe parlay or tease it and try to win on a couple of things and make the odds a little bit more stacked into my favor.
You need at least one JGI bet.
I do?
Like
that's
first
also?
Touchdown, Super Bowl MVP, something.
I don't know if he can win the MVP. I'll be really tough for him to win MVP.
First touchdown.
First touchdown,
though. He's 10-1. $10, he gets first touchdown, you win your 100 back.
Mm. All right, I'll write it all out and let you know. That's the whole thing. If I stick to the $100... We can come out on Monday and evaluate how it all went down.
Super Bowl will be on Sports Radio. The Ticket, Kevin Harlan, Boomer Esiason will have the call starting at 4:35 Sunday. Pregame will begin at noon. If you can't watch it, be sure to listen to it. And it's right here on Sports Radio, 93.1 FM and 1350 AM. The Ticket, your station for the Super Bowl. Coming up next in the sports update, does LeBron James have a new destination in mind when he becomes a free agent this offseason? Might not want to go to Minnesota when he heard it was 5 degrees there today. We'll see. We'll be having that when we come back with the update on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Ticket Sports Update, sponsored by Leary Jewelers. Leary Jewelers now offering 5 years of free financing OAC. No down payment required. Just in time for Valentine's Day, Lee Reed, Idaho's diamond jeweler. Well, while Boise State was on a bye in Mountain West play, Nevada extended their conference record to 8-1 with a win over Fresno State, 102-92. Other action included Wyoming beating Colorado State in double overtime, Utah State beating New Mexico, and UNLV surviving their home game against San Jose State.
UNLV has had conference games that every single one of them has been played 10 points or less either way. Seems like they play up or down to whoever they play.
I'm going to bring a question to you because, like, Boise State fans typically don't want Nevada to win, right? Because it increases the odds for Boise State to win the Mountain West.
I think I maybe know where you're going with
this. Yeah, but, like, how much lose – again, they're not in danger of losing a bunch of games. They won yesterday, and it was close, but they had a run at the end of the game to separate, and they scored a lot of points in the process. But how much losing for them would be too much losing to where it becomes concerning?
I think that – you kind of want to keep them up there for if your goal is an at-large bid. I think you want to beat Nevada here. You want to beat them as higher ranked as possible. So I think losing to Fresno or losing to UNLV or San Diego State, you'd say for winning the regular season, yeah, thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe for what it looks like winning a game against somebody that's really good might end up helping you more if they've won the games between now and then. Obviously, you've got to win your own to get there, too.
Yeah, it's just the ultimate conflict of, yeah, you want them to lose, but I think them losing once doesn't do much in terms of, like, make the, if you were to beat Nevada, it doesn't cheapen your win if they were to lose one other game. But if you started to go, like, three or four times that they're losing in the league, other than you, now it becomes a little bit more concerning.
Now, if the regular season winner got the, I mean, the automatic spot to the NCAA tournament, you want everybody to beat Nevada to give yourself as much gap as possible.
Well, there'll be a pair of Broncos in the Super Bowl this weekend. Only one will be playing, of course, is Shane McClellan's sideline. And there'll also be a pair of Broncos in the NFL Combine. It was announced yesterday. Cedric Wilson has gotten and received his Combine invite. He'll join Leighton Van Der Esch, who got his earlier this week. They'll both have their workouts March 3rd. Wilson will also be participating in the State Farm All-Star Challenge tomorrow.
Wonder how they deliver that message that you're in there. We've been told by Jerry Kramer that the Hall of Fame, all the people that are the finalists go to Minnesota, you're in a hotel, they'll actually knock on your door. Do you think you get it through an agent? Do you think you get it at an email? Do you think you get it as a registered letter? I mean, how do you think they tell you, or a phone call? You're in the combine.
Carrier pigeon. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, we can ask Cedric Wilson.
Sure. I mean, I think it'd be something. Wouldn't you think that would be something that, if it was something printed or something sent on an email, you want to print out and save? I would.
I think if it's the NFL, they have to make a football move, though, while receiving their combine, right?
There you go. Got to maintain.
And what's a catch?
You gotta, they're going to call you and say, what's a catch? And if you give the correct answer, that's when you get the combine. Well, Johnny Manziel's comeback tour to some form of football took a major hit yesterday. Manziel and his agents had self-imposed a deadline on the Canadian Football League's Hamilton Tiger Cats to offer Manziel a contract of equal value to starting quarterbacks of the Tiger Cats in past years, roughly $500,000. No contract was offered, which means it doesn't seem Manziel will be signing with the Tiger Cats. However, they still own his rights in the CFL, meaning no other team in the league can offer him a contract without trading for those rights. So,
I don't know what Johnny Manziel is going to do next. I think
he can't join the XFL, allegedly.
If he can't be in the XFL, I just hope that, again, his life is okay. Like, that's first and foremost. I don't know if his football career is ever going to be a thing, but as long as he's happy and healthy, it's a win, I think, in the world of Johnny Manziel.
Well, there was a big game in basketball last night. It came from a player that you might have had a chance to see around Boise. C.J. McCollum for the Portland Trail Blazers went off for 50 points, a career high, in only three quarters. He was 9 points shy of the franchise record set by Damian Lillard. And McCollum actually had played two games for the Idaho Stampede back in 2014 when he was sent down because he was looking for more playing time. So, a former Stampede player had a 50-point game in the NBA. I think that's a first.
Well, I think you should have known what the record was for the Portland Trailblazers and begged to stay in there. But maybe Damian Lillard, who's also on the team, I want that record. So take him out of the game, coach.
It's a battle between those two. They seem to be pretty supportive of each other. That was a great performance.
Did you just say two guys supportive of each other in a battle?
Yeah. Coach Harrison likes this.
Good relationship for two guys battling for playing time. How have you seen that relationship grow over the last few months?
Yeah, well, they're not battling. So there's no battling. I think we made that very clear.
There's no battle in the Portland Trailblazers backcourt. We made that perfectly clear. I think there should be a rule. If you have 50 points through three quarters, you have to play the fourth. You're robbing us of one of the more historic games in the NBA. He had 28 points in the first quarter. What if he had 25 points in the fourth quarter? We're talking about a game in which he scores 75. It's one of the most historic games in NBA history. If that's a redundancy of department of redundancy department.
Yeah, that was... Yeah.
That didn't really come out as smooth as I wanted it to.
Let him play, especially if you're the Trailblazers, and you're playing the Bulls. You sell more tickets. Say, come see C.J. McCollum in a 70-point game.
Yeah, just play it. It's the Bulls. I know they have a back... I think that was the second game back-to-back for them, but he had it going on. Keep him in.
What was the score at the time?
Like 90 to... It was like 95 to 68.
So, I mean, it was like... took him out because they didn't want to take a chance of getting it
hurt. Yeah. Damian Lillard didn't play the fourth quarter either, so they were hanging out on the bench. Well, Major League Baseball announced today that all 30 teams will have some form of protective netting that extends the far ends of both teams' dugouts by the time opening day hits for the 2018 season. 12 teams that announced this offseason they're extending their netting, and 10 teams last year extended their netting to at least the end of the dugouts.
Probably something they need to do. I personally don't like looking through netting, but I understand exactly why they're needing to do it, because they don't want to take a chance on either balls or bats coming into the stands with close proximity to home plate.
Seems like the Nets will be longer than Eric Hosmer's money for 2018, right? Yeah, he's still on a team yet.
And finally, speaking of free agents like Eric Hosmer, LeBron James all but expected to become a free agent this offseason. It looks like another team has been added to the fold. Reported today by Chris Haynes of ESPN that LeBron and his agents would be willing to meet with the Golden State Warriors out of respect for the winning culture they've established should a max slot be available on the team for LeBron to sign in, which most likely require Kevin Durant to do something similar to last year and give up some money when he re-signs.
I don't believe this is going to be a thing or even is going to come to fruition where they have a meeting. LeBron wants the Cavs to maximize their roster for this year. The trade deadline is coming up in about 8 days. So what kind of leverage does LeBron have? Well, it's the fact that he's a free agent. But the problem is that the Cavs know he's a free agent, so why should we leverage our future if LeBron isn't going to commit to us? LeBron's trying to play his thing that, well, I will definitely leave if you guys don't bring me a championship-caliber team. So what can I do without just explicitly saying that out loud? How do I get that message across? Well, somebody from my camp leave. I want to go to the Warriors, or I could if they have a max slot available because of their winning culture. What it does is put pressure on Cleveland. It also, in a way, maybe throws a wrench into what the machine of the Golden State Warriors is right now, and maybe some of them start to have some self-doubt of what's going to happen to the future of our team, especially when the Cavs, their main obstacle is overcoming Golden State. At least it has been in the finals the last few years. So this benefits LeBron in a few ways, but none of them is him actually going to the Warriors.
Do you think LeBron will be with Cleveland next year?
No. But I don't know where he's going to go. That's the thing. Lakers? Like, they have to do a complete overhaul. Right now, they still have to get rid of Luol Deng's contract. Not to mention, unless he brings in Paul George, and even if he brings in Paul George, does LeBron and Paul George and the rest of the Lakers' current roster make any kind of a dent in the West? Like, maybe LeBron's that good, but they're not Golden State good. They're not better than the Houston team the way they're currently constructed with that roster. All right, so if his number one priority is still winning a championship, does he try the Clippers and their blank slate? That could potentially be there. Is it Philadelphia, which could have a max slot available and it has at least a lot of young talent? Houston always finds a way to somehow open up cap space with Daryl Morey being one of the forward-thinking GMs in the business. Maybe Houston makes the most sense, but Golden State doesn't.
All I know is if he moves, we need a talk show again. I want a poorly designed LeBron James show where everyone knows where he's going before LeBron James tells everyone.
Nobody knew where LeBron James was going.
Wasn't
go
it pretty before. Rumored that he was leaving for Miami, though?
No. I think he did a good job of keeping that close to the vest going into the decision part one.
Plus, I wanted to see where if he goes, assuming he won't be South Beach, what he's going to refer to it as.
I'm going to go. I'm going to take my talents to the tech capital of the world. I don't know.
I'm just saying that's what if he would, that's a requirement. I'm saying, LeBron, we need another show. That's all I'm saying.
I wonder how many teams could actually wine and dine him and talk to him where he'd actually have a chance and he could go to them. More than five?
I kind of gave you the list right there. I don't know if there's any other Cleveland. Of course, could he go back to Miami? I don't know. New York, he always does have a thing for the Garden. So that's probably your list.
Join the big game party with Sports Radio The Ticket at Dave and Buster's on Sunday. Win a 3-day, 2-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. Steelheads tickets, winner circle prizes, and more. Winners will be announced at halftime with Caves, JP, and the Ticket Chick. You can win a 3-day, 2-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, $300 at the MB Steakhouse, and a pair of VIP joint concert passes. It's the big game at Dave and Buster's off of Milwaukee this Sunday with Sports Radio The Ticket. Up next, since Chris is going to be gone, we will have our latest edition of Quick Picks 2018. It's been awful good to me. We'll see if Chris can finally get a win this year. Next, when we come back on Sports Radio The Ticket.
It's time to consult the Magic 8-Ball. Open up a fortune cookie, or maybe even flip a coin.
I sent him into the future.
However they do it, it's time for some Quick Picks and Predictions with Bob and Chris.
And Quick Picks and Predictions is sponsored by Prime Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist. High-quality bowling balls, bags, and accessories located right inside West East Garden Lanes in Garden City. Now we know it's not Friday, however, Chris will not be here tomorrow. He's heading down to Vegas with the women's basketball team. So we need to give him a chance to try and catch up to Bob, who's currently got a commanding 3-0 lead. And, of course, all the quick picks will be about the big game. And we'll start with the one former Bronco actually playing, Jay Ajayi. Start with you, Chris. Will Jay score a touchdown in the game?
The Eagles will score 5 touchdowns.
That was the pick. I don't care.
Jay will score one of them.
Okay.
He'll get into the end zone. I think he and LeGarrette will each score. And, you know, when you get inside the 5-yard line, it's probably a higher percentage that LeGarrette Blount scores that touchdown. But Jay can have a big play and score. And I think he does that in this game. And he'll get a lot of opportunities late because I think the Eagles will be on top throughout most of the game. So Jay scores. Boise State fans can be excited about that. My only question on top of this is, will Minnesota play the train noise when Jay scores a touchdown?
I don't think so. I don't think they want to be reminded.
See, they can't run the game like that. They can't run the game operations can't be to placate towards Vikings fans.
Roger Goodell's daughter shouldn't be a Vikings fan either, but you know.
Fair point.
Bob?
I'm going to say no. I think the Eagles are going to score 3 touchdowns in the game. I think they're going to score 2 field goals. I think they're going to win. But the aforementioned comment that when they get inside the 10-yard line, it seems like it's Blount that gets into the game. So I'm going to play the percentages and say no, but I'm hoping I'm going to be wrong on this one.
Up next, we've seen a couple comebacks in recent games. So, Bob, who will be winning at halftime?
Well, the Patriots seem to be losing at halftime almost all of the time. I think the Eagles are going to win. I think the Eagles will be ahead at halftime. So I think Philadelphia has the lead at the break.
Chris?
Yeah, I think Brady gets a little, you know, he's thrown an interception in the first half. I think it was the third quarter last year in a Super Bowl. It was the Atlanta pick 6. But it doesn't seem like the Patriots have been the start fast team, even against the Titans. I know they had the lead in the halftime and they ended up figuring it out by the second quarter. But Tennessee scored the first touchdown of the game. So a slow starting team, even when they are going well, versus a Philly squad that even last week they did give up the first touchdown, but they blitzed the Vikings right after that. I'm going to go with the Eagles winning at halftime.
Before we get to the final score, a little fun one I came up with here. More touchdowns in the game, Tom Brady or the Philadelphia Eagles? Chris.
Eagles. I'm just continuing to pick the side that benefits Philadelphia, but I told you already, the Eagles scored 5 touchdowns. They win it 38-17.
You jumped the gun there, Chris.
All right.
You jumped the gun.
All right, my bad. But I've already jumped the gun on this show. I mentioned the score a few times. So if you've been listening throughout the show, you've heard me have my score predictions. And that means the Eagles definitely score more points than Tom Brady. I mean, I'm struggling to figure out, unless you think the Patriots are going to blow out the Eagles. Patriots have rushing touchdowns, too. Like, they, in fact, have a lot of rushing touchdowns. So you would have to really think the Patriots score a bunch of points compared to Philly for you to even consider picking Tom Brady over the whole Eagles team.
Or the Eagles kick a lot of field goals.
I have a question. When we've done this with college, it's always been who's carried the ball into the end zone. I'm assuming you're giving him credit for touchdown passes
in
this one?
Yes, he will get credit for touchdown passes in this one.
Okay. Not like when we've done Boise
like we've
State
done
where it's who actually carries the ball into the end zone.
As long as he is, this is going to be passing touchdowns or by some miracle rushing.
So now you made it a little more difficult for me. But that being said, I'm still going to take the Eagles because I would think that I've got the Eagles to win. And if I think the Patriots may get a rushing touchdown, that minus is one there. I think the Eagles have more touchdowns than Mr. Brady.
And finally, might be the world's worst kept secret, as Chris just sort of mentioned, but final scores for the game. Bob first.
27-20. The Eagles get 3 touchdowns and 2 field goals, and the Patriots get 2 touchdowns and 2 field goals.
Chris?
38-17. Comes down to basically a reminder of the Super Bowl where the Seahawks and the Broncos faced off against each other. I think it was like at one point 34-0, where the Seahawks were just crushing the Broncos. Where we gave way too much respect to a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback who was coming off of a very good season, like Peyton Manning was that year, and we just overlooked all the other elements of the game. Like, the Broncos were the favorite team going into that Super Bowl, just like the Patriots are the favorite team going into this one, but all the other aspects besides quarterback would tell you that the Eagles / Seahawks should win that game. So it'll be very similar. The crowd will be even about as lopsided as it was when the Seahawks fans took over New York City and took over MetLife Stadium for that game. Philly fans will take over the new Minnesota Stadium, who has a U.S. Bank field, and it'll be all Philly. It'll be a party. And Super Bowl, the first ever for the Philadelphia Eagles, will be celebrated on Sunday.
I have a feeling, Chris, that it's going to be more like the first game of which the Patriots won back in 01, where Brady and the Patriots were underdogs. The Rams were the defending champions. Now, I'm not going to say it's going to come down to the final field goal, but I'm kind of thinking it's going to be like that game where people were surprised that the Patriots were actually in the game. I think most people in the country think the Patriots are going to win.
Yeah, they're a favorite team. That's what you see on TV a lot. They have Brady Belichick. You trust the infrastructure, if you will. But a truth that Patriots fans, they know this, but they don't really want to say it out loud. Brady's play has dropped off a little bit since the Jimmy Garoppolo trade. The last six regular season games, he threw a pick in five of those six games, had a QBR under 70, threw for under 300 yards in all those games. He's a 40-year-old quarterback with an injury coming into the game. And unlike last year where he missed the first four games of the year, the blessing in disguise in a way, the suspension, this is now his, 19th game of the year? That's a lot for a 40-year-old quarterback. And a little bit of the zip has gone off of his passes, and that little margin of error, you're not sharp. You're going to get blitzed by Philly.
Jeff Cade's in studio. He is getting set to come in and host Idaho Sports Talk beginning at 3. And I know you've got a lot of things on the Super Bowl today.
Yeah, and Idaho Sports Talk's not stopping. It just continues. So we'll get right back. Don't move, Bob. We'll be right after it.
You don't want me to move? I think you want me to move, don't you? Over to the other chair.
No, stay in that chair and see what happens.
All right, I'll stay in that chair and see what happens. I'll be with Caves when we come back as Idaho Sports Talk continues after this on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.